Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
John Brown's body lies a-moldering in the grave. John Brown's body lies a-moldering in the grave. John Brown's body lies a-moldering in the grave, but his soul goes marching on. Glory, glory.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. I've known for a long time that John Brown's body lies a-moldering in the grave. Like some of you, I learned this old Civil War song, sung to the same melody as the Battle Hymn of the Republic, probably sometime back in grade school. But I didn't actually know a whole lot about who John Brown actually was until I read the new book by best-selling author James McBride called The Good Lord Bird. It's a fictionalized retelling of the anti-slavery rebel's story as seen through the eyes of a seriously misunderstood freed slave. Writer and musician James McBride joins me here in the Soundcheck studio with his band. James, welcome.
Oh, thank you. Nice to be here.
So, John Brown, did you know that John Brown song growing up?
Well, no, I knew the church version of it, you know.
Oh.
I didn't know the Pete Seeger version.
But I mean the song.
Yeah, I heard that song, yeah. I mean, it was a church song, you know. It was a song, something we sung in church, and So I knew that, and I knew faintly about him, but not much.
Yeah, I mean, I knew about the raid on Harper's Ferry, but not the sort of direct connection it had with, you know, helping to start the Civil War. Where did the inspiration for this book come from? Did it come from that song?
I was monkeying around in Fredericksburg, Maryland, doing some research on a previous novel, and I saw John Brown's name mentioned. And I just decided to take a ride down the Harper's Ferry, and I was taken by what I saw. I was just fascinated by it, and I started to do some research on him, and I just thought it was a great story.
It's a pretty amazing story. This guy is possibly a lunatic. Certainly
overzealous.
Yeah. And he knows Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass. Making your book, Good Lord Bird, the second novel I've read this year in which Frederick Douglass is a character, because he's also in Colin McCann's Transatlantic.
Oh, cool. Well, good old Fred.
Yeah. It seems like John Brown did know these people.
Oh, yeah, he knew a lot of people. He knew Julia Ward Howe, and he knew all sorts of abolitionists. During this period, there were a lot of people who were alive. You know, Henry David Thoreau was around.
Right.
All these people knew who John Brown was. He was considered a very controversial figure. He was loved by the Northern abolitionists, and he was despised by the South. He took matters into his own hands with regard to the slave question. If people don't know who John Brown was, he was a white man who decided that slavery should end, and he was going to make a direct, he was going to directly try to end it himself.
Mm-hmm. Through force of arms,
through force of arms and through arming blacks who he expected to join him in his raid on America's biggest arsenal.
And our narrator is probably around 12 years old when the action begins.
Right.
He's a boy named Henry. And for some reason, John Brown gets it into his head that Henry's a girl. And refuses to, you know, brook any kind of possibility that this could, in fact, be a boy. And the boy, Henry, just kind of goes with it.
Well, he plays with it. Yeah, I mean, John Brown kidnaps him or frees him when he goes into a tavern where Henry and his father are working.
Now, that's a little bit of a Freudian slip. You said kidnap first, because the distinction between freeing the slave and kidnapping this kid is a very fine one in this book.
I think the distinction between what freedom means and what freedom really was at that time was a lot more difficult to determine now, looking back, you know, 200 years later.
Mm-hmm.
So the kid was happy. He didn't know what freedom was. He was satisfied just shoving biscuits and ale down his throat. He was living in a tavern where everybody treated him nice, and they were all a bunch of hillbillies and rebels and so forth. And he didn't realize, he didn't come to freedom, really, until he decided to become a boy in real life.
Mm-hmm.
But when John Brown sees him for the first time, he's dressed as a slave. In those days, slave children wore potato sacks, and they just wore whatever people gave them. So John Brown just mistakenly assumes he's a girl.
Right.
And when the thing goes bad and people start shooting, Henry just decides to be quiet, and John Brown calls him Henrietta and ultimately calls him Onion.
Right.
And it's Onion who's telling us the whole story. This
right.
book is really Onion's memoir.
And to go back to Frederick Douglass, it is a very funny book. And perhaps one of the funniest stories is Onion, who at this point is probably 13 or 14, doesn't know how old he is, really.
Right.
Is drinking Frederick Douglass under the table because Frederick, also thinking that he is a she, is getting a little
frisky. Yeah, he wants a little bit of that, you know, a little bit of, you know, equal rights, civil rights, you know, lubrication, you know. So, yeah, it's a very funny book. It's supposed to be funny. It's supposed to be readable and presenting slavery in a way that would allow people to sort of accept the reality of it, but yet also understand the historical context in which it takes place. And in a lot of ways, you can really get to the truth better than with fiction than you can with nonfiction.
Yeah. For example, the very complicated reactions of the black communities, both freed and enslaved, to John Brown and his whole approach.
Well, you have to look at it from their point of view. I mean, if, you know, John Brown was against slavery. If I was against... Like, I'm against global warming, but if I go steal your car and then, you know, say to, like, you know, another black guy, let's go steal that white guy's car because we're both against global warming. Well, we'll both be sitting in jail together, you know. So I think the blacks didn't really trust John Brown because they knew that if punishment came, it would be worse for them than it would be for him. That was one problem. And also, I don't think John Brown, I think he underestimated the desire of blacks to be free as opposed to turning around and fighting for freedom.
Mm-hmm.
I think he made the mistake of assuming that everyone was like him. They would fight rather than switch.
Right.
Pardon the corny pun.
From a very old cigarette commercial.
Yeah, yeah.
We're speaking with James McBride, the best-selling author of books like The Color of Water and the new book called The Good Lord Bird. I've never met an author who takes a band on the road for his book tour. But, I mean, you've been a sax player for many, many years.
Yeah, I've been playing music a long time. You know, I worked with...
Jimmy Scott?
Worked with Little Jimmy Scott for a couple of years and worked with Anita Baker and Grover Washington. I wrote songs for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was a musician when I wrote my first book, The Color of Water. I used to play down on Bleecker Street in New York and, you know, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I did all that stuff. I mean, most musicians are pretty much... writers, they just don't know structure and form, you know, and most musicians don't really have the patience or the desire or the know-how to sit down and write books. I mean, some do, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, some of them are pretty good books and some of them aren't, but I was a journalist for 9 years after I got out of school, and then I was a musician for 9 years, and while I was a musician, I wrote my first book, The Color of Water.
And so what do you refer to yourself as now?
A writerician. No, I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't know. I'm just, you know, I express myself with these two forms. They seem to work for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the same. It's just storytelling.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter the form that you use, you know, if it's music or if it's literature. It's just a way of telling a story. And in this case, I thought it would be appropriate to go around with the band to do the kind of spiritual music that really inspired John Brown, because John Brown was very, very religious.
Right.
And I think people who are not religious, actually I'm fairly religious, I think people who are not religious do not understand the power that music has in terms of triggering and fostering and pushing religion into someone's soul,
mm-hmm.
and keeping it there.
That is something that's mentioned in the book on occasion. And you got the band here, so you want to... do a little spirit lifting here in
sure,
the soundtrack.
Sure, yeah,
studio.
We're going to do a little couple of songs. The first one we're going to do is an acoustic song that very, very old spiritual called "God's Going to Set This World on Fire" with my musicians Trevor Exter, Keith Robinson, Adam Falk, and Showtime Brooks.
All right, well, let's hear it.
All right,
James McBride is with us on Soundcheck with a live performance.
God's gonna set this world on fire.
Oh,
God's gonna set this world on fire one of these days, hallelujah. God's gonna set this world on fire.
God's
gonna set this world on fire one of these days. I'm gonna sit at the welcome
table. I'm gonna sit at the welcome table one of these days, hallelujah. I'm gonna sit at the welcome table. Gonna sit at the welcome table one of these days.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm gonna eat and never get hungry. I'm gonna eat and never get hungry one of these days, hallelujah. I'm gonna eat and never get hungry. Gonna eat and never get hungry one of these days. I'm gonna drink and never get thirsty. I'm gonna drink and never get thirsty one of these days, hallelujah. I'm gonna drink and never get thirsty. Gonna drink and never get thirsty one of these days. God's gonna set this world on fire. God's gonna set this world on fire one of these days, hallelujah. God's gonna set this world on fire. Gonna set this world on fire one of these days. Gonna set this world on fire one of these days. Gonna set this world on fire one of these days.
That is James McBride and his band live on Soundcheck. We'll be hearing James playing the sax later. Keith Robinson will be playing guitar. Showtime Brooks will be playing drums. Trevor Exter has a bass in hand, and Adam Fox by our piano. But for that song, it was a cappella. How old a song is that, James?
Oh, that song's got to be 200-300 years old. That's an old, that song's older than Methuselah.
So this is a song that your characters would have known.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Heard. Of course, yeah. Well, you know, those old spirituals were you know, they were the meat and potatoes of not only black life, but religious life.
And there are a couple of moments in your book where Henry, our narrator, talks about singing songs to patrons at a tavern, for example, or whatever. And he mentions a whole bunch of titles. Are those also real songs, or are you just making
well, you
stuff
and I
up?
Discussed, well, you and I discussed this, and you kind of caught me cold. I guess you hear lots of music all the time. Most of those titles I made up. You mentioned earlier, I mentioned Maryland, Oh Maryland, when in fact, as you correctly pointed out, it's Maryland, My Maryland. But some of those other titles I just made up because they were funny. And, you know, a good rebel likes a good song just like everybody else.
Yeah.
And at some point, Henry is, you know, trapped in a rebel town working in a house of prostitution. And he makes some shillings singing songs to rebels, and they just love it, you know.
Right.
He loves singing it, you know.
Now, you mentioned before that, you know, there are other musicians who write books. So it's a question of form and structure. In jazz, you know, there are always those questions of form and structure and how elastic those can be and how kind of fast and free you can play with that. In a novel, I'm guessing not so much. You pretty much have to create a form and stick to it.
That's true. I mean, what you do is you create characters who have to move within a certain framework. They have to hit certain dramatic points. And you know you have to get to those points. You're not necessarily confined to hitting them in order when you're dealing with the interior framework of a character. But the exterior things, you know, the door has to open before the guy can walk out the room, and the door has to close. And then, I mean, the exterior things you can't touch. But the interior work, there is some improvisation involved.
Now, how about a work of historical fiction? Because John Brown and Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass are not the only historical figures here. I mean, his army, such
That's
as
right.
it was, not a very big army, but, you know, he really had those sons, and he really had some of those
lieutenants. Yeah, he had some unconsciously brave people who fought with him. He attacked Harper's Ferry with 19 men, four of whom were black and the rest were white, and they were just... Some were religious and some were not religious at all. Mm-hmm. They were just dedicated to the idea that slavery must end and that they had a thought that they might lose their lives. But they, actually, John Brown actually attacked Harper's Ferry and held it for a day and a half and would have gotten away. But he was just waiting for the black folks to show up, you know. And, I've waited for many a guitar player to show up for rehearsal like that. You know? So, I mean, it was just... But the characters in this book are... Most of this book is drawn from real fact. In fact, all of the characters are pretty much real except for Onion. Onion was a character that I created in order to carry the reader from John Brown's warring in Kansas against slavery, carrying his war to the East. But there was one black guy who did get away, and there were three white fellas who did get away after John Brown was caught. I mean, they barely got away, but they made it. Frederick Douglass had to flee to Europe, you know. And the Secret Six, the people who funded John Brown, they had to scramble too in order to stay out of jail.
Frederick Douglass did not approve of the raid on Harper's Ferry. He thought it was literally insane. I think
that's right. He called it a suicide mission. Yeah. John Brown asked him to come, and Frederick Douglass said, he said the equivalent of like Michael Jackson saying, "I'm a lover, not a fighter."
Right.
You know, he just said, "I'm a speech man. I'm not a soldier." Mm-hmm. And John Brown was very disappointed in that. He felt that if Frederick Douglass had come, he would have had a different outcome.
We're speaking with James McBride, sax player and best-selling author of books like The Color of Water and Miracle at St. Anna. His latest novel is called The Good Lord Bird. It is a kind of fictionalized retelling of the tale of John Brown through the eyes of this cross-dressing young freed slave who goes by the name of Onion. And... The songs that he would be singing wouldn't have sounded all that different from what you guys just did here. But now you're all here with instruments as well. So what's going to happen next?
Well, we're going to do a song that's a very old traditional song called Standing in the Need of Prayer. But since we have our instruments, we decided to do it in a little more conventional way, you know, because we are playing in front of audiences who don't want to hear just the traditional stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So this features Keith Robinson on vocals, and it's an arrangement that we put together recently.
All right. Well, let's hear it.
All right.
James McBride is with us on Soundcheck with his band, and he will be speaking at the Brooklyn Book Festival this Sunday, the 22nd at 4 p.m., also speaking at a Harlem Jazz Museum event that they're doing at Mist Harlem along with this band. That'll be next Tuesday, the 24th at 7 p.m. That is free as well. Here's a familiar old American song, Standin' in the Need of Prayer, live on Soundcheck.
It's me, it's me, it's me all along, standing in the need of prayer. It's me, it's me, it's me, oh Lord, standing in the need of prayer. My father, it's not my mother, but it's me, oh Lord, standing in the need of prayer. It's not my sister, it's not my brother, but it's me, oh Lord, standing in the need of prayer. It's me, oh, it's me, oh Lord, standing in the need of prayer. It's me. better speak on the Lord.
Standing in the need of prayer.
Oh, yeah. It's not the deacon, it's not the preacher, but it's me, oh Lord.
Standing in the need of prayer.
Standing in the need of prayer. That is James McBride on sax, Keith Robinson on guitar and lead vocals, although everybody sang there as well. Showtime Brooks behind our drum kit, Trevor Exter playing the bass, Adam Falk at the piano. James McBride, as a musician yourself, can you listen to music while you're writing?
No, I never listen to music when I'm writing. In fact, when I'm writing a book, I very rarely listen to music at all, and nothing.
So when you're faced with the blank white page, though, how do you stop your mind from just, like, going off and listening to its own music?
Usually the mortgage check, the mortgage bill that arrives at the end of the month helps you focus. But I usually, this book, The Good Lord Bird, was a kind of, it was a kind of relief for me because I was going through a very painful divorce. So it was easy for me to just drop into this world and just have these adventures of the West. And I loved the wild. I loved Westerns.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was easy for me to vicariously live in this world and watch someone that I, you know, really loved and admired, John Brown, watch him do this stuff. So I didn't have any problem focusing here.
Will we be able to watch this? Has anybody optioned the book?
No, not yet. I mean, maybe they never will. But I didn't write it. I don't write books with the idea that, you know, I'm writing a film.
Right.
It's just
such a cinematic story, though, from the plains of Kansas, you know, through the, you know, heading east and going to Harper's Ferry, where the two rivers meet.
I think it certainly was a great story for me to do as a novel. And I hope that, you know, maybe someday some great director will say, you know, see it and see it for the grand story that it is. In my opinion, there's no greater American story. I mean, well, there are, but it is a great American story about a uniquely great American, whether you like him or not.
Mm. And one who had a pivotal role to play in the Civil War and, of course, what would come after that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, John Brown went to Europe to study how the European Napoleon and others fought their battles. He had really studied. He actually believed that he was going to be successful at Harper's Ferry.
Because he studied Garibaldi and Hannibal. And,
yeah. But then on the other hand, I studied Cannonball Adderley, and nobody's like, you know, my phone's not ringing.
James McBride is the best-selling author of the new book, The Good Lord Bird. It is a very funny book on top of everything else. And, James, it's been a real pleasure having you and the band here to celebrate with us today.
Well,
thanks very much.
We were delighted to come. It's a great show.